Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie and Sarah are here. This is attempt number two of trying to start this episode, and I am not looking at anybody right now so I can get it done. And we're going to talk Indy 500 fun. We are going to mention that Detroit is this weekend. Not too much to preview there since it's the first time in the city of Detroit in many years. So, Frenchie, let's get predictions out of the way with first reminder for those who didn't get a chance to listen or forgot. We picked one person from the first 33, one from the middle, and one from the end. And then we'll average up our finishing positions to see who did better. So, Frenchie, how bad did you win, or how much did you win by?
No, wait, we got to go through it first. So,
Okay.
you picked Santino, which is a good pick. He finished third. I picked Rossi, who finished fifth. So, pretty even there.
Solid. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you have McLaughlin, who finished 14th. I had Hunter Ray, who finished 11th. Again, pretty good.
Pretty even, yeah.
Then for the last third, the two that you had were Canepino, who finished 26th. And Jack Harvey, who finished 18th.
Not awful. Okay.
But wait until you hear mine. I had Catherine Legg, who finished 33rd and last,
Oops.
and RC Enerson, who finished 32nd.
Ooh.
So
Buff.
they absolutely torpedoed me, and my average finish was 20th, 20.25. Yours was 15.25. So you win.
Wow.
Thank
Host
you.
actually
Thank
wins
you.
something. That's a shock. That's a
You
new
know,
one.
for as bad of a month as Ray Hall as a team had, 18th for Jack Harvey is respectable. Like, you know, it's not like I'm sure he's pissed, you know, the month sucked, but an 18th place result when, where was Lungard in the 20s?
No, he finished 19th.
19th. Okay. So Lungard was 19th. Catherine crashed out and Graham technically didn't make the field, at least for
Wait.
Ray Hall.
So Ed Carpenter had contact and he was 20th. So did like only 19 cars technically finish?
19 cars were
No,
on the lead lap.
Graham and Willpower finished. So we go down
Yeah.
to like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But they were 5 laps down. So
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, they were in the last of the Jack was a lap down and Lundgaard was 2 laps down, but
I know it's not like impressive when you put it in that aspect, but at least the Ray Hall cars, the full season guys, finished the race. You know, they came away in one piece. They got a decent points day out of it, and they can just move on from the month of May. That being said,
much more than you can say for Andretti. Rest in
oh
peace.
yeah, let's just go there because you know how we all
I
feel about that, especially after my Friday morning at the racetrack. So, you know, this month was supposed to be, yeah, Andretti takes it to the top teams because they have been decently better to start the year. And then obviously Kyle's contact was no fault of his own. And he was probably in for, I don't know, a top seven finish, let's say, maybe a top five. And then, you know, his tire smashed that lady's car and just, you know, thank God nothing happened there. Grosjean spun.
She's getting a
Devlin
new
was,
car paid for.
yes. Oh, is she?
Yeah, I saw it confirmed.
Okay. And, you know, Devlin was rather irrelevant. And
Where did he
Colton
finish? He
had a
finished
good,
13th. That's not bad.
I don't remember his name, seeing his name once during the race, which is
Col
probably a good thing.
Colton? Well,
No,
Colton.
Devlin,
Oh,
sorry. No, I
Dev.
know, but
Sorry.
Colton was what, eighth, seventh?
Eighth. Oh, no, sorry, ninth.
Okay.
Marco
He
is
did.
17th.
Yeah, Marco was irrelevant on Sunday.
Well, I think the moral of this story, we can go into detail as much as we want, but people were really excited to see Andretti and McLaren take on the Penske's and the Chips of the world. And Andretti's and McLaren's both basically crapped out all of them, whether a fault of their own or not, or of each other's fault, right? So we had Felix inadvertently take out Kyle, and even just to like, I don't know how much we want to go into that, how in depth we want to go into that whole crash or anything, but that was obviously terrifying and just really shows how much safety initiatives in IndyCar have come a long way, et cetera, et cetera. Again, depending on how far you guys want to go into that, but very scary. And then, yeah, so Felix just like ran high, right? And then that's how he like he got into the dirty track and then just ended up spinning out, and then Kyle just ran right into him and his tire just went,
it was a Newgarden pass that I think he sort of washed up the track.
Yeah.
And hit
yeah,
the
but
wall,
Newgarden gave then... him space though. So no, it wasn't know, right? like Newgarden had like pushed him or anything.
No, I agree. It wasn't like the Pato and Marcus Ericsson incident that is being widely discussed.
Well, okay. So... that whole thing is like, hey, is anyone surprised because it's Pato? Like even in the media day on Thursday, one of the questions I asked Pato was like, if you're in contention, like just like you were last year with Marcus for first and second, are you going to send it? He's like, yeah, of course. Like that's just his personality, right? And so he's been making a lot of these really late dives and late moves that a number of people have commented on, a number of people have told him are irresponsible, and his entire mindset is like, screw that, it's racing. So I'm not surprised in the least that that is what took him out in the end.
Yeah, that's fair. I, going back to Kyle's, really thought Kyle was going to sneak through there. Like, I really thought it. He was going to sneak through, and he didn't. Don't blame. Yeah, agree. Don't blame Newgarden. It's he made a clean pass. It wasn't like he chopped down and like took away the clean air from him. It was he actually gave like a decent amount of room there. Pato's thing and Ericsson, I've seen plenty of opinions one way or the other online. So, Frenchie, you can go first because I know you're in the same one group chat as me that there was, a lot of strong feelings being said. So what was your take on said incident?
Sarah's in there too. She's just too cool to look at it.
No, I'm not talking. I'm talking about the other chat. Like,
well, the chat that I'm in, I love you guys dearly. And it seems like an amazing group of people. But when you're sending like 200 messages an hour all day, every day, your girl's like gotta work. Like she's got things to do. I would love to be able to catch up with that and have that be my income. So as soon as someone starts paying me to read that group chat, I will. But until then, I unfortunately will be an innocent bystander.
You
but
looked
please,
right at you,
continue.
Mike, while she said that.
I was looking at both of you. How can you tell? I'm looking into a screen.
Yeah. I was kind of joking because he's the one that would control the money and give it to you for reading the chat. But I guess it didn't really.
Like, that's not what looking. I was thinking, but go off, yeah. King.
Okay. How do I feel about that incident?
Yes.
Essentially, I don't know. I thought that Marcus chopped Pato a bit. Pato's aggressive. Yes, for sure. He's aggressive, but it's the Indy 500. That's to be expected. Even Joseph, in some quotes that we recorded and posted, said basically, I was going to either finish or my car was going to go in the wall. I wasn't going to go home second, third, fourth, whatever. So I can't really blame Pato, especially because he was in this position last year and he probably has been thinking about it for 365 days of why didn't I go for it? I need to just do it next time. And so I don't know if I you can blame Pato, I guess, if you want to look at him as like the young, aggressive, what's the word? Like excitable guy. Yeah. But I see him basically as Juan Pablo Montoya Jr. in a sense. Like he just has that attitude of like, it is what it is. I'm going to race. And if you don't like it, too bad for you. So, I mean, I kind of respect that because, he's going to put his whole heart or whatever, his whole, all of his talent out there on the line. And I think Marcus, I don't know. I didn't like his attitude at the end of the race about the restarts, the quotes that he said there. Mm-hmm. But, you're going to block too, right? Like, so it's an incident that happened. And I don't know. I put a little bit more blame on Marcus, but it's not necessarily all on him either.
I don't think that this scenario deserves any blame per se. Like, Pato got himself out. He didn't knock anyone else out. The whole Augustine Pagano thing happened separately. So I think the only reason in which there should be blame coming into anything is if he inadvertently took anyone else out in that matter. But he just took himself out by having that lack of patience and by doing that. So,
but he calls a red flag too. So that impacts everyone in the race.
That's true.
But I still think, like, I don't
have any issue with him being aggressive there. The thing that like bothers me about it, and again, it's really not a big deal like the grand scheme of things, but like he dove down low and you can see, thanks to Twitter and screenshots and whatnot, that he, like, Erickson just completely chops him. It's not like, also don't know, kind of think what Sarah is saying, like, don't know if he really had room, but I think if Marcus holds his line, Pato can hold that corner. And yes, then the red flag happened and the Canapino thing and blah, blah, blah. Sorry, Augustine, but, you know, not your day.
No, but I took a look at that today just because I was curious how that all happened, because it all happened at once. And the Canapino Pagano thing was like seriously separate, which would have caused a red flag anyway. Yeah, it was not related whatsoever. Like they were all the way at the back of the pack. They were, that was like, they were going four wide or something, trying to all pass each other in the back, and they got mecked up. So they would have had a red flag anyway. I mean, it's neither here nor there. We don't really know what would have happened differently if Pato didn't try to cut that corner into Erickson. But, you know, I think also, at least in my perspective, I love how respectful generally the IndyCar grid is to each other for the most part. And for even Pato to have done the post-race press interview saying, I'm going to bring him with me next time, like, that's just like wishing ill will on someone. That's just like, if you're mucking up your own race because you don't have patience or you're doing this, that, and the other thing, like, it's just irresponsible of you to try to bring someone else down with you.
Oh, I love it. I'm all for a little.
I mean, it's
I'm
entertaining as hell, but like, it's dangerous.
I'm
right?
All
like,
for it.
The whole like,
oh, it's all fine.
All of these crashes just remind us like how dangerous the sport really is. And, you know, thankfully everyone in this race walked away. We can't say the same for Steph, right? We can't say the same for some other things that happened, that happen in the 500 all the time, because people just act so brash because it's the 500 and they can justify it because they're saying, oh, it's the 500, I'm going to throw myself against a wall, like that's just what it is. But at some point, that if that mentality, I love that mentality, I understand that mentality, don't get me wrong, I love the action, I love the fighting, I love throwing elbows, like that is why we like racing, right? But if it's normalized to say I would rather end up at a wall and bring someone with me and crash out versus not win, and that's the point that it's going to be dangerous. Like, even just coincidentally, for both Kyle and Pato's crash, I was watching and listening to their onboards and their radios, just again, coincidentally at that time. And
you,
I remember,
curse them?
Sorry?
You cursed them by listening to their radio right before their crash?
No, okay. Thank you for putting like bad juju on me. But no. I was just saying, like, coincidentally, I was like, you know, watching Kyle's onboard and listening to his radio, and then he freaking flipped over, and I was sitting there like 5 seconds before praising. I'm like, wow, this is so cool. I wish like other series had this, that you could really like watch in real time all the stuff happening. That's so exciting. And then the next minute I'm watching his helmet basically scrape against the pavement upside down at God knows how many miles an hour. And I was like, okay, that's terrifying. And like, I was obviously with you guys, and you guys saw me, like my face was like, I probably turned white. And then again, like coincidentally, 20 seconds later, whatever, well, not 20 seconds, like 20 minutes later, when Pato had his crash and I was watching his onboard and I was watching him just like, you know, soar across the safety wall, I'm just like, I don't know. I understand that this is a dangerous sport. It's become really, really, really safe with the halos and this and the other thing, the windscreens. But I just think that this mentality of like, I want to bring someone down with me if I'm not going to win, can get really dangerous if it continues and builds in momentum.
I don't think he'll ever do anything like that would. I'm trying to think of this on the fly, and my brain is like half mush. That would, like, he's not going to sacrifice something like just to hit Erickson, or like hit it, whoever, in Erickson in this case. So like, I don't think we have to worry about that. At the 500, though, I always hope they go for it 10 times out of 10, like Pato said, and like Newgarden said. But I think like at Detroit, like if they're next to each other, like, will he give Erickson room? Probably not. But is he also going to purposely like shove him into, I don't know.
Swerve into him? Yeah.
Swerve into him? Like, I also don't think that's going to happen, because I think like once he like calms down a little bit, so was it Wednesday night now? So we're a day and a half, 2 days, gone from the race and a day and a half gone from the second time he spoke to whoever he spoke to. He's probably like, okay, like, you know, no cliche intended here, but like, focus forward. I have a job to do. And he's still, was he third in points, fourth in points, fifth in points, something?
Hold on,
something,
I'll find that for you.
Something like that. You know, he's close. He's close-ish.
Yeah.
But I also don't think
he doesn't want to mess up his own stuff.
I don't think he can afford, because of, you know, his, he has one race where he didn't finish particularly great. I don't remember which one it was. He can't afford to like take a chance at this point, because the Indy 500 isn't double points. So he doesn't have, or the season finale isn't double points. So he doesn't have a chance to like make it up now. But so let's talk about everybody's favorite topic. Red flags.
Oh, okay. Woo! I thought it was going to be something else.
What else were you thinking?
Stingray Rob, like, getting angry.
Oh, that was irrelevant.
Because that was funny.
It was funny. But no, we're not even going to discuss that, because even Stingray knows he was wrong. So three red flags. Obviously, the last one was one lap to go. And essentially, you know, they cars go on track, and next time they hit the, when they hit the start finish, it's a
green white checkered.
Green white checkered. I was trying to avoid saying green white checkered NASCAR. And yeah, well, okay. First red flag, I think 100% justified. Whether there's a tire that goes into, you know, over the retaining wall or not, because there was debris everywhere. Second red flag, 8 laps to go. I think there's a precedent set for a red flag around that time. Like Ericsson's last year, I think, was almost maybe the same lap.
Mm-hmm.
Third red flag. And don't talk about the maneuver that Newgarden makes on the front stretch called the dragon when he's defending yet, because we'll get to that next.
Mm-hmm.
But the third red flag itself, Sarah can go first. How do you feel about the third red flag?
I vote yes. I've said this on this podcast publicly. I have said this openly and honestly forever and ever. Obviously there's a lot of connections between this race and F1 Abu Dhabi 2021. I have said for years since that race that they should have done a red flag and restarted it. And that's the only way that made sense for that race. And I think that's the only thing that makes sense for this race. There's cars wrecked everywhere. Like, just take them off. Like, one. B, like, clean the debris. That's important. B, you don't want to finish a race under yellow, especially the 500. And there's been a lot of flack, specifically that Penske's gone under, et cetera, about that. So they just, of course, were going to avoid that in general. I think that it was a smart move to make. I think that it's the only thing that made sense. I think if they just called it then and there, it would have been like depressing and everyone would have been kind of sad and confused. So no, I think it was the perfect way to end it. I know that obviously Marcus was not a happy camper about that, which is understandable when you're in that position and you know that it's really easy to take from second to first when you're that close up. So yeah, I'm in full support. I think there is a fine balance that Indy plays really well compared to other series. I think that they're very good at having enough rules and regulations that they're able to run without like having to nitpick every single little thing, but also giving enough freedom to make different types of choices. To my knowledge, and feel free to tell me if I'm wrong, there is no rule in the IndyCar rule book on how many laps need to be left for a red flag to happen.
Correct.
And so since that rule does not exist, that choice was fully free and open to make. Does it maybe make sense for them to put that in a book somewhere, so it's in written form of there are no rules on how many laps need to be left, or there can be one lap or whatever it is, right? Sure. But honestly, I think it made the most sense. The tires are made to run on ovals, not fully heat up. So that's fine. Like, there was no true safety issue besides them being super amped up and wanting to win and willing to roll into each other to do that. But otherwise, I think it made sense.
So Sorry, Frenchie, I'm gonna jump in because I had something, and I do like mainly agree with Sarah. I think the one thing that we need to remember, and this isn't like we as in the three of us, just like general, is I saw a bunch of comments on IndyCar Facebook that was, well, what happened the year Sato, was it Sato, Frenchie, who won under the yellow like 4 or 5 years ago when the retaining wall, like the attenuator, was destroyed?
I'm going to ask you hit the,
So that was very different because that repair was going to take a significant amount of time. You know, I think they said like at least an hour. So you, I think at that point, it's the right call. Finish the race under yellow. End of day. But in this case, I don't know if I love the last one because there was only one lap left. Two laps, okay. But again, it's the Indy 500. Tony Kanaan said he was fine with it. Ferrucci said he was fine with it. Newgarden said he was fine with it. Most other drivers, other than Ericsson, said they were fine with it, which I get. I get Mark. I have no issue with Marcus being actually upset.
Yes.
My frustration with Marcus being upset is the attitude he took in his frustration. Anyway,
well, you also have to remember, this guy is amped up on adrenaline. He just raced for X amount of hours. He got the win taken from him in the last 20 seconds. He's not going to be a happy camper until you give him time to cool down. And when I say time, I mean like 3 to 5 business days. Like
might be
any,
3 to 5 business weeks.
Exactly. Any post-conference he's going to do, he's going to have all of that emotion with him because he gets out of the car and walks into the media center. Like, there is no time to cool off. There is no time to take a beat and think about it. Like, you just see that you were gypped of this amazing record that you wanted to make, and you're going to be freaking pissed. So I'm not mad at his reaction. I'm not mad at how he felt. I'm not mad at his tone or his, you know, how he looked on the podium. I think if it were to be anything different, I would be really concerned for him because that's exactly what I expected. And that's exactly what anyone would probably be like.
I like Marcus a lot, but I felt that his stance, even with what Sarah said in mind as context, was a little bit hypocritical because, I mean, had the situation been reversed, I don't think he would feel the same way. I think he'd be in the exact same position as the other guys. So I think it's a selfish thing, which obviously drivers are selfish. It makes sense. I don't hold it against him. I just think for him to call it unfair and dangerous is going a bit too far because I don't think that IndyCar would ever purposely put their drivers in harm's way.
For sure.
And I think actually it's probably the most fair outcome is to let them race and not do what we've seen in the past. Did Dario win like all of his 500s under yellow? Like, Kanaan won his 500 under yellow. I mean, I don't think it takes anything away from your win. But if we're going to talk about, and Tony mentioned this in the press conference after the race, if we're going to talk about being entertainers and being an entertainment product, you can't basically just finish under yellow and take all the momentum you've had for an entire month. Right. Mm-hmm. And for then 500 miles and all the buildup on the day of everything, and then end it with cars running at, I don't know, however many miles per hour behind the safety car. It just completely deflates it. And people are going to be mad. I'm sure people are mad about this outcome. And there's a claim that, oh my gosh, Roger Penske's in control. He was able to basically manipulate the stewards because he owns the IMS and IndyCar. It's all, you know, put on your tinfoil hat because that's absolutely garbage. He's not the type of person. Yes, he had the beast, right? He's all about, you know, doing what Red Bull's doing. Stuff like you take advantage of what's not written in the rules to get the unfair advantage. But he's also not a cheater. Like, he's not going to win that way. He's won 18 Indy 500s. I don't think he's going to, like, start now for his 19th, like, then, you know, take it in some kind of a, like, illegitimate way. Yeah, that's not the way this works.
Also, yeah. I was talking about this with another IndyCar media member yesterday. The CW effect is not a real thing because if you are saying that's why they added or had red flags at the end, CW already has enough content from the last, you know, 5 weeks for one final episode, maybe two final episodes, maybe more episodes than they originally intended because they saw how awesome this month of May was. Who truly knows? Okay, mm-hmm. So we all pretty much agree on that. Now, the tire dragon. I'm getting my words confused now. The dragon maneuver, which we saw,
Tale of the Dragon, guess, or something. Yeah, I don't even know what it's officially called.
Yeah, we're gonna call it the dragon, the defensive dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And this started when it became easy for the first and second place guy to kind of draft up on each other in 2019. I think Pagano was the first one who really.
Yeah, it was a Rossi and Pagano thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so again, let me state what the rule book says, because I did look it up the other day. The rule book does not say anything that about like that this can't be done. And furthermore, the driver's meeting said, you'll see, like, if you look at a picture of like pit lane, there's those kind of white painted dashes going, you know, kind of outside of turn four. Those were there to let drivers know where the pit lane wall eventually will be, but they are in play. Well, so if somebody dives below it and goes above it, not illegal. That was said explicitly in the driver's meeting. So by that reason alone, it was totally legal what Newgarden did. I'm going to go first here and say, again, I don't have an issue with it, but I don't think they should be allowed to go below that pit line. Like, I think they should have to stay in the confines of the track. It just kind of weirds me out safety-wise when they start getting that low on the front stretch at Indy.
What about Tony Kanaan's landscaping service?
That's totally fine because it was hilarious. I have no issue with that. Also, it's Tony Kanaan. Tony can do whatever he wants.
So the rule book should add Tony Kanaan can do whatever he wants.
We're going to start every rule book for the rest of history, even if Tony Kanaan actually is done racing. The start of the rule book is going to say Tony Kanaan can do whatever he wants.
Can I take a quick diversion? I know that we're in the middle of a topic, but whatever. Can I get each of your votes at the same time? I'm going to count down from three. Thumbs up or thumbs down whether Tony's going to race another 500.
Stay ahead of the pack with the latest racing news and interviews from the Hammerdown Racing Report, your source for regional racing action as well as the national scene. Every week, we recap racing action from all around Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan and cover national racing series from the World of Outlaws to NASCAR. Plus, get all the latest racing news. Join hosts Scott Hammer and Ron Miller, along with different featured guests each week. From dirt to asphalt, we have you covered. The Hammerdown Racing Report, available weekly on your favorite podcasting platform.
Sports stars. They're like superheroes.
But they're actually real.
Which is why we've made a podcast about them. You see,
they've all got a story.
But too many of these stories were cut short.
Kobe Bryant.
Payne Stewart.
Flo Jo.
Phil Hughes.
Justin Fashanu.
We're writing episodes about all of them.
And sadly, many more.
Death of a Sports Star. A new series from Crowd Network.
And then we can share the results on voice, because obviously they can't see us.
Okay.
Ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1. Oh, you guys are both saying he's not going to come back?
That is what I think, yes.
Okay, being in the room with him? Yeah, 100%. Like, he seemed legitimate that he... What did he say multiple times? That essentially he'd be letting down the fans, right? That made his goodbye so amazing by just coming back and making it a fake out.
There was one thing he said that I only caught like part of, but essentially saying like, listen, if I finished on the podium or something and your fans would be clamoring for me to come back, he's like, I would feel like I have to come back. I finished 16th. I don't feel like I have to come back. And like hearing that and kind of just his overall demeanor and what Frenchie said, yeah, I don't think so. And it saddens me, but yeah, go ahead, Frenchie.
Also, he didn't really give us details, but I mean, we posted the audio that he is in discussions with Arrow McLaren to have some kind of a like driver consultant. I'm thinking similar to what Dario Franchitti does at Ganassi, where he like is at races with the team and is still in the paddock. Maybe he's going to do media stuff, who knows, but it sounds like he's just going to be involved with Arrow McLaren and have some kind of a role moving forward, even though he's done driving.
Yeah. I also loved how happy he was to talk about his last lap shootout with Elio again, you know, battling for 15th and 16th. And he was just like so stoked about that, that he's like, there's no other high that I would like to go off of. But I also think that memories of Sunday will fade, and he will, especially if he's still in the paddock and he's still working with people, he's just going to naturally get the itch to race again. Like, you can't really be there and be in that environment, be near and with guys who are driving and not also want to drive if you're a race car driver. That's just like an innate thing. So maybe we should put some money on this and see who wins out.
Well, to me, he reminds me of like, I'm sure Mario would love to get back in a car and would have loved to get back in a car in the late 90s, in the 2000s, whatever. But he did an Arrivederci Mario tour. He was, what, 54 years old? Something like that?
53, 54, yeah.
Yeah, and he was, why are you laughing at my Italian? That's not what this was called?
I don't remember if that's what it was actually called. It just caught me off guard. So I'm not laughing at your Italian. It just caught me off guard. Sorry.
He's not laughing with you. He's laughing at you.
Yeah, I know. That's what I thought. Yeah. But I mean, and he just kind of is involved in the series. And I think that scratches his itch for racing at this point. Like, you get older, you realize like, maybe I'm not as competitive as I once was, or I've completed what I wanted to, right? Like, Tony has a championship. He has a lot of wins. I think it's like 17, 18 wins in IndyCar, and he won a 500, right? Like, he checked the boxes that I think you need to check, and he's not done racing completely. Like, I could see him easily doing sports car stuff. He's going to do the Brazilian touring cars, but I don't really think he's going to be like itching to come back in an IndyCar.
Interesting. Okay, so we can return to what we were talking about before, which I don't even remember what it was.
Back to the defensive dragon. Frenchie, what are your thoughts?
By the time that everyone's listening to this, we will have posted the audio, but I essentially agree with what Joseph said after the race, in that, like, yeah, it's not in the rules, so there's nothing wrong with what happened, but drivers shouldn't have to do that. Like, we should be able to fix the aerodynamics and the formula for the ways these cars race. And I mean, I know they're trying, but something really needs to be done, or we need to get a new chassis, because we've been waiting for a long time and we're all going to be dead maybe before that happens. Just kidding. We're not going to be dead. It's going to happen soon, but we just don't know when it's going to happen. Right. I don't want to give everyone like, make everyone feel like it's never going to happen. It will, have hope, but that will hopefully improve the racing. I don't know. But that's the real problem here. I don't think it's Joseph's driving, because we've seen them do it. I don't like it either. I think it's weird to watch them swerve all the way across the track. Like, I don't know. I'd rather see them like actually pass and repass each other. That's cooler to me. But hey, if that's what you have to do to win, I understand it.
I'm not surprised by it at all. Like, if they said it so explicitly in the driver's meeting, and there is that rule that they explicitly state you can go over this line, it is your responsibility as a team to build that into your strategy of, okay, maybe we're not going to aim to do this, but we have to know that other people are going to do it. And if you are Marcus and you are in first and you know that this move is possible and someone might do that, like, you just have to be aware, even if you don't decide that that's what you want to do for your strategy, you have to be aware that other people are going to do it.
But what do you think the rule should, what is your take?
I don't think I'm in a position to have an opinion on that, because there has to be some explicit reason for the rule book to say why it is allowed. And again, if it is explicitly stated that this is allowed and they discuss it ahead of the weekend, they could have talked about it ahead of the weekend. They could have cited concerns ahead of the weekend. They could have put it up for discussion ahead of the weekend, but they didn't because apparently nobody had an issue with it. So we can't, no one could decide to have an issue with it after the fact if it impedes their performance when they had a chance to talk about it before.
I know why no one had an issue with it before the weekend, because if they were in first, they were going to use it to win. Like, exactly. Obviously, right? So
fair.
You're not going to outlaw the way that you can win. So again, this brings me back to what I just said, and not to super reiterate it, but if that's the only way that you can keep the person in second behind you, or even try to keep them behind you, then we have a problem. We have a bigger problem than swerving down the track and doing the dragon maneuver. It is the fact that you're literally a sitting duck, and that leading the race then means nothing. And that's not good.
Yeah.
Do we have anything else from... Yeah, go ahead. You're shaking your heads.
Congrats overall to AJ Foyt Racing. Third place was epic. Best finish for them since what, 1998 or something like that?
It's either 98 or 2000. Those are the
2000.
Two 2000.
Best Indy finish for Foyt since 2000.
Oh, yeah. 1998 was... Okay. And then also Benjamin Peterson. He was the rookie of the year, finished 21st. I mean, his qualifying was amazing.
He only finished 21st because he crashed out.
Yeah, I know. But I think he was really impressive. And so I just think that team in general should be motivated by a good result, because I think we on this podcast, is probably everyone in IndyCar, kind of talks about how, oh no, Foyt's bad again this year, or they're slow, or they're running around the back. But like, we have to give them credit then, and also like build them up when they do something that is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when, I know Peterson wasn't the cause of the crash. I think he got collected in it. I also, to be honest, have not yet rewatched the race. What happened?
So it was Peterson, Ed Carpenter, and Graham Rahal. All went kaput. And that was the first yellow flag. Oh,
and
no,
Lundgaard.
Sorry. That was at the end. Okay. Lundgaard also, maybe this is something we should talk about in general, is all of the disasters that happened in pit lane this weekend. Like Sunday, pit lane was like the end of a lot of people's races. It was just absolute chaos. So obviously, Catherine having an issue with her steering column, she almost went into the wall and took someone out with her. Christian, he was pulling into his pit box, and so on. The person who had the pit box behind him, I forget who it was, came in right at the same time. So he had to swerve out, almost hit his rear right tire changer, and then swerve back in. And so like that was obviously fully dangerous and a disaster. We had
Grosjean hit someone.
No, so Colton went into the back of Grosjean.
Got it.
And then Rinus went into Pillot.
Oh my God.
For literally no reason. Like I looked at that back. Like he was going to the transition lane. He had so much space in the transition lane. Obviously, there's people in the right hand lane that were like going by him, but there was zero reason for him to have swerved unless there was something wrong with his steering as well.
Remember, they crashed in Texas, like I think it was 2021. Like Pelos championship year. Rinus took him out and Scott Dixon. So
Gateway.
Like there's gonna be beef. Oh, Gateway. Okay, it was an oval. That wasn't Indy.
Yeah.
Good catch there.
I think, because you and I were at that race.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was also a very not fun weekend for the rest of my life. But
like, there's just, why Sarah was wasn't so much there. Chaos? No, obviously, I'm the good luck charm. You can ask Mac Clark, who won his IRP race on Friday, that I'm the good luck charm. So we had Catherine with the steering issue. Lundgaard almost hit someone, avoiding someone behind him. Rinus into Pillot, got the drag through penalty. Colton just went straight into the back of Grosjean, which LOL, because it's like unclear whether his front right tire changer told him to go or not, but he went and into the back of his teammate. And then Ferrucci, I didn't see this until I watched the replay, because I guess it wasn't on like the screens when we were in pit lane or something. I'm not sure.
The tire.
But they had a tire like go rogue and like go over the line. Yeah. Did you miss that, Freddie, with your face? Like they had like a tire just like, I guess like fell over the wall or something and just started like rolling through pit lane. And I was like, oh my God. Like he only got a monetary fine for that. But still, it was like,
I texted
his race.
I texted my dad when that happened
on pit lane, and I was like, that front right tire changer, like whoever made like the kick save any beauty deserves to get like an NHL like goalie tryout contract, because that literally was like, that saved him from getting a drive through penalty and just a monetary fine instead.
Yeah. So pit lane was I mean, I know pit lane in general will make or break your race, but like there was a lot. And actually, you know what? Who's another winner based on that? Because I know the French, you're just going through people that we should commend. I think is Alex Palou, because he was bashed into a wall and he still ended up at the top of the grid somehow, some way.
He had a winning car. I really think so. If he had not been screwed over by Rinus, who Rinus also probably had a winning car and then destroyed his own race as well, as he's done now for the last several years. So he's really good at qualifying, but he just hasn't cleaned it up. So he'll get there one of these years. I remember, what is he, still only like 21 years old?
I was going to ask how old he is. I don't know.
Yeah, something.
He's really young still.
Got it.
But yeah, I mean, Palou went from 30th and finished 4th. So you have to assume if he doesn't.
He passed everyone.
And let's just say he comes out of the pits 9th. Like, let's say they have a terrible pit stop. The tire changer falls asleep and he comes out 9th or 10th. He's winning that race like by a lap. Mm-hmm. He was so definitely crazy. The most hooked in car. Do we have?
And you know, it's really interesting. Sorry, I'm going to pause you again before you move forward.
I'm picturing you like pressing a button and he just like has to pause. Stop for a second.
And he looks frozen and says exactly it. I know that in IndyCar generally there's a lot more passes than F1. Like, that's common knowledge, that's not new, whatever. But the first few laps when we saw Rinus take over Palou and then Palou take it back over Rinus, just like within like the first like whatever 2 or 3 laps, I was standing with some F1 fans who had only been to one IndyCar race before, but they like, I guess, didn't really watch or pay attention, whatever. And within that first 2 laps, I just hear them say, wow, more passes than Miami already. And I lost it. And like, I don't know. I was wearing my Indy 500 hat in the elevator today in my building. And like, first time I'd put this on my body since you watched me try it on in the store. And I walk into my elevator and the first thing someone says to me in the elevator is, wow, did you go to the 500 this weekend? I said, yeah, I was. He's like, oh my God, I've been watching it from home. I was an F1 fan. Now I'm watching IndyCar. This is so cool. Like, we ended up talking for 20 minutes, like outside the elevator about racing, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I just think that this race is just another example of how Indy is just poised to grow so, 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 so much over the next few years. Even just like from that one passing comment from the F1 fan in the first 2 laps of this race, they were hooked. They were like, yep, I'm in it. More passes than Miami already. Like, that's it. Like, I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited for the future of Indy. But sorry, host, you can go forward. So
I think we should wrap the race discussion at that point. TV numbers were good. And
Up 2%.
We'll take it. And it was, you know, it was up against golf. There was a Dodgers game. And there was another, like, big sporting event Sunday afternoon that I can't quite remember.
Monaco?
No, it wasn't up against. It wasn't up against. I mean, at the same exact time.
Well, no, but there are people who, obviously, you have to, if you're going to a big race like this, there's a large number of people that you have to choose between the two. And so if you're in Monaco, I had a lot of colleagues that were in Monaco.
But that doesn't affect U.S. TV numbers.
No. Okay. But it would, ooh, if they were to be in the U.S. putting their money towards going to this race. And instead, they saw all of the commotion on the internet about the race that they sat and watched it the next day. And they've all decided to now go to the 500 instead of Monaco.
Smart fans.
But that's still a huge barrier, right? Of like, especially when you're trying to bring, like, I'm thinking from my marketing perspective, you can't bring all of the celebs or all of the sports people, all of the athletes that you want, because 90% of them are going to be in Monaco and they're going to choose Monaco until you show them that the experience is better, the racing is better, which it is. And they have the same reaction as my colleagues. And they're like, oh, crap, I effed up by going to Monaco. I'm going to the 500 next year instead. But that's neither here nor there. We can move on.
Detroit is this weekend.
And so are both our birthdays.
It's both of our birthdays this weekend, yes. And it's a new track down in the city. the pit lane is split in half. One is on half is on one side of the straight, half
the border.
Is on the other side of the
Canada. Yeah,
half is on the other side of the border. That'd be wild. Here is my passport to enter pit lane. So obviously, you know, we can't do much previewing because we don't know how the track is going to play out. It's going to be hot this weekend. Sarah has a point we'll get to in 1 second. And it is, yeah. Okay, Sarah, go ahead. I thought I had
exactly. You had nothing else to say. Dingbat. I actually have a question, not a point.
Okay.
Ask away.
So it has been said that those who do well and or win the 500 do pretty horribly in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, mm-hmm. I understand that there's a number of reasons for that. Like, Joseph has not had a millisecond to breathe since he won. Like, he went from podium to media to, like, got home super late. I may or may not have seen him super late somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, was back at the track to do media starting 7 a.m., 8 a.m., went straight to the gala, flew to New York, was at NASDAQ Tuesday morning, 7 a.m., and has been doing his press tour in New York all week, and then flies straight to Detroit to jump in a car. Like, obviously, you can't really plan for the next race, and especially this year, having it being a different track. He would have had to do all of his planning in May, and we all know that during the month of May, you're not really thinking about anything else besides the month of May. So I would understand if this year that trend were to continue, but why do you think in past years, do you think it's really just that bandwidth of them being so busy the week before that it screws up their race? Or do you think they're on a high of like confidence that they're like, wow, I'm amazing and incredible and the best driver ever, and I'm just guaranteed to win forever? I mean, I don't think that that's the case either, but I just was curious about your guys' opinions and thoughts on that.
So I think it's, you know, a lack of sleep. You're not kind of mentally and physically prepared for a grueling kind of, you know, Belle Isle is a pretty hard track to handle. This track is probably going to be in a unique way hard to handle, but it's also they haven't raced it before. So that's like another element on top of that. But yeah, you haven't slept. You're not physically kind of at your best because you're exhausted from May and you're exhausted from being gallivanted around to media things. So you're just, thank you. That's the biggest word I've probably ever used on this podcast. And, you know, when you finally get into the car, it's like your first peaceful moment in 6 days. And it's going to be 90 degrees on Friday. It's going to be 90 degrees in Detroit on Friday. It's going to be like 87 on Saturday and like 87 on Sunday. And
man, why are we going?
Why are we not going to Detroit when it's going to be 90 degrees?
Wait, it's Detroit and it's going to be really hot. Those are the two reasons.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, it's just, it's like a little bit of everything. And I never really thought about it until Simon Pagenaud said it. 4 years ago, whenever that was. And but yeah,
but why do they also put a race the week after the month of May? Like, momentum. They've been going non-stop. The team
money.
Needs a break. Indy needs a break. The teams need a break. The drivers need a break. Like, it's just, I couldn't wrap my mind around that fact when I was talking to my colleagues and friends on Tuesday. I was obviously flying home Tuesday night after the race, and I was only there for 7 days. And I was like, wow, I'm ready to sleep for a week. And they're like, yep, we head to Detroit tomorrow. I'm like, what? Like, mm-hmm. I could not wrap my mind around that.
You got to follow it up though, right? I mean, that's, I think, a big thing is we just had the Indy 500. Like you said, people are hyped over it. There has to be now a race this next weekend. Otherwise, if there's a gap, you're just going to lose all of that momentum. So,
okay, that's fine. Have a race. Why Detroit?
Oh, well, I think that's just how
Roger Penske's
schedule. Yeah, it's
I know,
EM's Penske's headquarters. Race. So
I understand, but if you're, again, coming from the marketing brain here, if you have this amazing, huge new fan base that you want to keep, you have one shot, one more weekend to keep it, make it a fun, good race. I think putting it in a city, making a city race is probably exciting for a lot of newer fans. So that could be interesting. But also, I kind of go back to the point that I made. It was either last week or 2 weeks on the pod where it was like, so if you change a lot of rules and you don't really talk about it, new fans are going to get confused. So is that still going to be the case with this split pit? I have no idea how that's going to work. I don't think anyone has any idea how that's going to work. And will that just confuse people, in which case then you lose them? I don't know.
So I think that, like, obviously this is a, bucket list wish. And, like, Detroit afterwards, I get it. It's a Chevy, Chevy headquarters. Roger Penske does all the promotions. So it's, that's why it's Detroit. If I had my wish, like, we would have, trying to think, like, Milwaukee would be cool if Milwaukee came back to the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, you missed the old Milwaukee Mile, which has not been on the schedule since I think 2015, was a fantastic race until like the last year.
Mm-hmm. It's Milwaukee, like a flat oval, like completely flat, basically mile oval. So it's,
if you're doing a current track, like Gateway would be good because they always do a good promotion, but NASCAR does Gateway in June. I think Xfinity and trucks or something, so that's probably out. But, you know, another one of their marquee tracks, I think more so than Detroit, would be fun, would be better in terms of keeping the momentum going. But at the end of the day, Roger Penske's probably has more sway than everybody else combined on this one. So I don't, as much as I want to see it be somewhere else, I don't think that one's changing.
I just still can't wrap my mind around the fact that there's even another race. I mean, I get it. I understand the corporate logic of it, but seeing it from the inside and how dead everyone is after May, I'm just like, give them a chance to breathe for a second. But whatever. That's not how corporate America works.
Well, let's make some Detroit predictions. Let's do one based on Sarah's question.
Ooh.
Will Joseph, so how many cars do we have? 27, Frenchie?
I
haven't even looked to see if there's an entry list.
In the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix presented by Lear.
Nice.
Thank you, Mr. Corbett.
Good job.
You're welcome.
What's the VP of comms name that does all the interviews? That's so good at what he does.
Dave First.
You're giving Dave First.
He was like a TV newscaster, so he's way more handsome and energetic than I am and has a lot more charisma.
He's very good at his job.
Yes, for sure. Yeah,
but I think you're a good runner up. I think you're a good runner up, Frenchie. Just letting you know.
I'd be happy to be Dave First understudy.
That'd be sick. So why would it be anything other than 27?
I don't. Just
being
ask a
stupid.
He was just confirming.
Yeah, just confirming so I get it right.
No, but
jerk.
Like,
jerk.
Doesn't
jerk.
Every doesn't jerk. Every okay? I'm gonna stop. I'm trying to understand IndyCar here, so I'm thinking maybe like there's something I don't know it not being like the somewhat normal. Like there are the drivers that do the city courses, so like why wouldn't it be the drivers that do the city courses?
Because I couldn't remember what that number was because we've been on May mode for a couple weeks now, and my brain gets totally warped. So, okay, 27. Will Joseph Newgarden finish higher or lower than 14th?
I'd say higher, for sure. Okay. He's still in a Penske.
Okay. Frenchie?
I'm going to say lower just to be contrarian.
All right. So whose side do I want to take here? I say he will finish higher than 14th, but barely. Like, it'll be a 12th to 14th type finish. All right. Who is having a good weekend on the new Detroit layout? Sarah, pick a driver.
I don't know city tracks that well, of like who does well there.
No one knows for this one. It's new for all of them.
No, I know, but like historically with city tracks in general. Like there's obviously people who like do both ovals, do all three layouts, and like obviously most people have an inclination of one versus the other two.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't, since I'm still new to Indy, I don't know the track record of who succeeds where. I just love making you guys laugh. It makes me laugh. So I'm just going to go with my gut and what we just talked about. Hello. Like,
that's never a bad bet.
Fiery.
Yeah. Anyone who's good generally and is the champion, like they're going to be good on street courses and everywhere else.
Yeah. And I think he's like still has a chip on his shoulder about the whole Rinus fucking up his drive thing. So
I will take Ferrucci.
Oh, that would be interesting if he performs very well on the street course.
Spicy.
Crunchy.
My pick is Alexander Rossi.
Ooh.
Good pick. I was going to say he was good there last year, and then I remembered it's work. We're not going to the same place. Okay. How many laps is this race? I don't know. I don't even know where I am right now.
I can find that for you. Hold on.
You're in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Don't make your brain work too hard if it's already technically mushed, like you said.
I don't think he ever makes his
brain. Damn, why'd you just give his like address away?
It's fine.
I did it.
You want to get his house number?
I don't know his house number, so.
Well, technically you do if you got your mail from the t-shirt I sent.
Okay. I haven't picked it up yet. So I haven't done anything.
The race is 100 laps. So will the race have... Let's do an over-under on this one. There will be 18 and a half caution laps. Will we go over or under that?
New track. We're going over.
Okay. Sarah?
I don't know. My gut says under, but it's a street course. It's new. I don't think it's going to be like 18% of the race. That seems crazy. But I think logic says over.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'm taking under. And we will wrap it there. I hope everybody enjoyed all of the media bullpen episodes that Sarah and Frenchie put together. And yeah, let's call it an episode there. I love all of you listeners, and we are all going to sleep.
You're literally the worst host ever.
Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Sarasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.